This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharisa, the editor-in-chief over at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 57 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. Someone on Twitter hit me up on Sunday night declaring that fantasy football is a random game. That fantasy football is just random and it's impossible to predict. I came back and said, well, you're pooping on my job and basically saying that I'm here doing worthless work if things are indeed random. But aside from that, I told him that his notion could not be further from the truth. In a truly random fantasy football world, my 5-year-old niece could beat me. That's the easiest way to know that it's not truly, fully random. And while luck plays a part of this, injuries are mostly a luck-driven thing, there are strategies and ways to embrace this variance in the game. I've written plenty about the quarterback position in fantasy football. You guys know this. There are many layers to why drafting quarterbacks late is the way to go in season-long fantasy football. But one of those layers is opportunity cost. You're giving up the opportunity for a running back or a wide receiver with that early pick by picking an early round quarterback. You want wide receivers and running backs on your fantasy football team because they're important in fantasy football. But you also want a lot of them, and a lot of good ones, because they're going to get hurt. Players are going to get hurt, and they will undoubtedly bust, because this game isn't perfect. If it were perfect, we'd all be going after the same players all the time. So to play into this, you build a running back and wide receiver library to have sort of a next man up attitude about the game. Yes, it's going to suck when Dalvin Cook gets hurt, but teams who didn't forego an early round spot for a quarterback and they went running back or wide receiver instead are able to take that hit much easier than teams who drafted quarterbacks early. This is just one small example of how to utilize strategy when embracing the variance of the game. Because variance, you guys, does not mean everything is random. There are plenty of predictable pieces to football and fantasy football. If there weren't, then why did you bench Amari Cooper this past week? Why did you play Tyrell Williams in DFS? How did we know that Andy Dalton was a streamer? Or that Cameron Brate could do as well as he did? Things will not be perfect. Like I said, this is not a perfect world. I missed plenty last week. And that will happen when you have zero control of what happens. But this is not specific to fantasy football. In any business, for instance, you're going to have struggle predicting things. Even when you have more control than what we do as fantasy owners, you're going to get things wrong. Variance exists literally everywhere in this world. Letting these little things like missing multiple start sit calls overshadow everything in fantasy football and declaring the game random isn't fair to you, it's certainly not fair to me, and it's not fair to the others who are putting in hard work to help provide good analysis each week. If any of you really think that this game is completely random, I wish that you sat with Evan Silva while he wrote his matchup column on RotoWorld each week. I wish you could see the spreadsheets that my colleagues Jim Sonnes and Brandon Gadula are diving through on a weekly basis. Because you'd be shocked by the things that you don't know about football that would allow you to be a better fantasy football player. When people come at me with this randomness talk, I can see it coming from a place of anger because they probably didn't do well that week, and also a place of unawareness. Anyone who thinks this is a game of complete randomness doesn't have the exposure to the things that someone like I do. And it's not your fault that you don't. I do this for a living, and most of you listening to this do not. But I'm not going around telling the world that forecasting products for a manufacturing plant is completely random, or that buying and selling stock at the right time is completely random, or that the success that you have in investing in a startup is completely random. Just because we can't control what happens on a football field doesn't mean we can't predict what happens on a football field. And it certainly doesn't mean that we can't play into that aspect when constructing our fantasy football lineups. You know, this very notion, the fact that people feel this way, is why I started this podcast in the first place. The industry has gotten so tied to the old school mentality that rankings are everything, but I'm a believer that the game goes far, far beyond fantasy football rankings, and that rankings kind of make us dumber. They don't allow people to think within fantasy football. They just tell you what to do without any context. Honestly, hearing that message about randomness really just reinforced the idea that I do need to get these podcasts out here and have a voice to talk about the nuances of fantasy football. Because there's far more depth to this game than most really realize. Like I said though, injuries can indeed be random, and that sucks. And as most of you know, a lot of injuries happened in week 4, so this week's 15 transaction show is very reactionary to all of that news. But before getting into the transactions, I wanted to tell you about Fubo TV. It's a live sports app that lets football fans finally cut the cord for good. No more expensive cable or satellite packages needed to watch your teams. In fact, they go beyond football to show live pro and college football, baseball and basketball games, and even the top shows and movies live and on demand on over 65 live TV channels. And here's the best part. Fubo TV is offering late round podcast listeners a 7-day free trial. Just go to fubo.tv/FanDuel. That's FUBO.TV and click the button to redeem your free trial. After that, it's just $19.99 per month for the first 2 months. Watch all you want, record games, and stream them on all of your devices. Just go to fubo.tv, that's FUBO.TV, to redeem your free 7-day trial. Fubo TV, the most live sports for the least money. All right, now let's dig in. Add Latavius Murray and Jerick McKinnon. Dalvin Cook tore his ACL. It's awful. I, too, have a lot of Dalvin Cook. Dalvin Cook is arguably my highest-owned player in season-long fantasy football this year. So as sad as you are, I'm just as sad, guys. It's awful. Anytime someone gets hurt, it's awful. So who do you pick up, Latavius Murray or Jerick McKinnon? Well, we know that Jerick McKinnon has been used as a change of pace back this season in that offense. He's been on the field for a little over 22% of the team's snaps this year, and entering week four, he was averaging 2.67 attempts and a little over 3 targets per game. That is exactly what you would expect from a change of pace type back. Latavius Murray, on the other hand, has not been on the field all that much. His highest snap rate in a single game entering Sunday was just 11%. He'd seen no more than 3 attempts in a game, and he has yet to be targeted out of the backfield, or at least entering Sunday. But in relief for Dalvin Cook, Latavius Murray carried the ball 7 times. Jerick McKinnon did not see a carry after Dalvin Cook got hurt. McKinnon did see 2 targets through the air, though. And he did leave the game for a bit towards the end of the game with an ankle injury. But for what it's worth, for all intents and purposes, Latavius Murray was the early down guy and kind of the running back in that backfield when Dalvin Cook went down. And I don't think that's shocking. Latavius Murray profiles more as an early down back. Over the last 2 years in Oakland, he had 461 attempts. That's not Jerick McKinnon's game. Jerick McKinnon had opportunity last year to be the early down back in that offense. He's not built to be an early down back. That's fine. He's a good football player. I know the offensive line is better now, but last season in the 7 games where he saw double-digit attempts, only 3 of those games did Jerick McKinnon rank higher than RB38 in weekly PPR scoring. Jerick McKinnon is better suited as the pass-catching back in this offense. Latavius Murray is much better suited as the early down bruiser. So in standard leagues, I'm much more into Latavius Murray than Jerick McKinnon. With that being said, there are reports saying that Latavius Murray is still nursing that ankle injury. He's had an ankle injury for like 14 years. But Latavius Murray is going to be the early down back, and he's going to see goal line carries. Remember, last season, he had the 6th most goal line carries in the entire NFL. McKinnon is kind of attractive, though, in PPR formats. So I don't think he's a bad add by any means. I also don't think that either of these players are going to win your fantasy league. Because Dalvin Cook is better than both of them, and he was getting both of their production in one player. That's why Dalvin Cook was so, so good from a fantasy football perspective. And that's why I'm about to pause this and go cry in the corner of my office. It's a mess overall. I would probably be adding Latavius Murray over Jerick McKinnon regardless of format, but Jerick McKinnon definitely gets a bump in PPR formats. Add Aaron Jones. I don't know if you guys remember me talking about Aaron Jones earlier this offseason, but Aaron Jones is someone who really popped in my prospect model because my prospect model really likes production. Aaron Jones had insane production in college, and his market share numbers were a lot better than Jamal Williams' market share numbers. That doesn't tell the entire story, but to me, Aaron Jones, even when you watched him, was a much better prospect than Jamal Williams was. And as we've seen with Jamal Williams already on a football field, it looks like he's running through mashed potatoes. Jamal Williams does not look like a featured back at the NFL level. But Ty Montgomery went out in that Thursday game with a ribs injury. Jamal Williams comes in, then he gets hurt, and then we see Aaron Jones. Aaron Jones, the featured back. It was really fun to watch. Jones finished with a 46% success rate on Thursday night, which is a great number. Success rate, again, is the percentage of positive expected points runs made by a running back. And that's all based on our net expected points model at NumberFire. A 46% success rate is great. And the other thing, too, is that none of his rushes went for negative yards. Aaron Jones looked really good in that game. But here's the thing. Ty Montgomery might not miss that much time. And Jamal Williams might not miss that much time. So I do think you should go add Aaron Jones off the waiver wire, and I do think that Aaron Jones might be the better handcuff now than Jamal Williams, because he looked a lot better than Jamal Williams. Or at the very least, Jamal Williams is not the clear-cut number two running back in that offense anymore. And yes, I do think that you can conclude those things after one game. The Packers have liked Aaron Jones. Aaron Jones just doesn't profile to be an early down back right now. He's electric, though. But given that Ty Montgomery's injury isn't that serious, you might only be getting 1, maybe 2 weeks out of Aaron Jones. But even still, that's a good add off the waiver wire, especially with a game this week against Dallas. By Dez Bryant. Speaking of Dallas, Dez Bryant has officially gotten through his gauntlet of games. He's faced the Giants and Janoris Jenkins, the Broncos and their set of corners, the Cardinals and Patrick Peterson, and now the Rams too and Tremaine Johnson. He's gotten through the first 4 weeks of the season that us fantasy analysts were really worried about, and he's looked pretty good. He's a top 20 wide receiver. He's seen close to a 29% target market share in that offense. Things are going well for Dez Bryant, and things should continue to go well. I think that he's a wide receiver one from here on out. Dallas gets Green Bay and San Francisco over the next 2 weeks, and then later down the line, they get a matchup against the Eagles in their poorest secondary. Dez will continue to see some tight coverage, but he's arguably done with the toughest part of his schedule. So if you can snag him from another owner, I think you should. I think that he's a wide receiver one from here on out. Add Alvin Kamara. If Alvin Kamara is on your waiver wire still, you should definitely be adding him. He carried the ball just 5 times in New Orleans in their win over Miami in London. My God, was that game awful. But the bigger story here is that he totaled 10 targets. Anytime you're getting a player that's getting 10 targets from Drew Brees, you're going to want him. I don't want to be a downer here, but I do want to provide a word of caution. If you're relying on Alvin Kamara week in and week out, it might be a roller coaster. He only played 35% of the Saints snaps in week 4, which is fewer than more than 35 running backs in that week. Mark Ingram still dominated the backfield with 62% of the team's snaps played. The main reason that Alvin Kamara was able to do what he did is because he ranked in the top 10 in utilization percentage, or the percentage of snaps played where a running back touched the ball on the ground or through the air. Sustaining that type of production is going to be very difficult to do in an offense that loves to shift its personnel around. So he's worth an add, but be fair with expectations. Sell Deshaun Watson. You know, saying this means that people are going to come at me thinking that I don't like Deshaun Watson. That's not the case. I'm trying to be a fantasy analyst here. I'm trying to be as objective as I possibly can. Deshaun Watson has been very, very fun to watch, and I think that he has a very bright future in the league. But there are two pieces to this specific transaction. The first one's game theory related. Quarterbacks don't matter a whole lot in fantasy football since most leagues are starting just one, and there are a ton of usable quarterbacks on the waiver wire each week. In a worst-case scenario, you're starting a waiver wire quarterback. Things could be worse. So if you have a chance to sell a quarterback for a usable running back or wide receiver, you do it. That's the first part in selling Deshaun Watson. It's an obvious one, but it's the first one. And the other side of this is the strength of opponent. This is a bigger deal. Like I said, the goal here is to not diminish what Deshaun Watson has done over the last couple of weeks. Because regardless of opponent, he's looked like a brand new quarterback. He's looked completely different than what we saw earlier in the season and in the preseason. But we have to be objective, and we have to realize that he faced a New England secondary that's now surrendered at least 300 yards and a pair of touchdowns at every quarterback that they faced, and a Tennessee pass defense that's now given up 8 touchdown passes in 2 games. There's a chance that Deshaun Watson is a plug-and-play quarterback from here on out. Absolutely, that's part of his range of outcomes. But it's also possible that when he faces the Chiefs and the Seahawks and the Rams and the Cardinals and the Ravens in 5 of his next 7 games, he could be more of a streaming option. That's why I would sell Deshaun Watson. Add Devin Funchess. Devin Funchess now has a near 24% target market share in the Panthers offense, and he has 216 receiving yards on the season. Those are both wide receiver 2 type numbers, and Devin Funchess is indeed a wide receiver 2 in fantasy football. People might think that's not sustainable, but I mentioned Devin Funchess 2 weeks ago as someone who could benefit a lot from the Greg Olsen injury. And so far, so good. In the 2 games without Greg Olsen, Funchess has 128 yards, 2 touchdowns, and a target market share north of 30%. Funchess is definitely worth an add off the waiver wire. Add Wayne Gallman. The Giants' running game sucks, I get it, and the offensive line is a huge reason for that. So it might not matter who the running back is running behind that offensive line. But Wayne Gallman made his debut on Sunday, and he ran the ball 11 times for 42 yards, he had 2 catches for 8 more yards, and he scored a touchdown on one of those catches. For what it's worth, I wasn't that big into Wayne Gallman as a prospect. From an analytical perspective, coming into the league, he was a below-average athlete, and he had below-average market share numbers. But Paul Perkins is so bad, you guys. On 32 rushes this year, Perkins has a 12.5% success rate. I can't even explain how bad that success rate number is. The G-men ran the ball 25 times with their running backs against the Buccaneers, so Gallman had a 44% rushing attempt market share in that backfield in week four. That's not a bad number, and I think that that number will only increase because the Giants know deep down that Paul Perkins is not very good at football. Buy Wendell Smallwood. This is one of the weirder transactions that I'm going to talk about this week, but hear me out. I really liked Wendell Smallwood's usage in week four. It was the first game that the Eagles started this year without Darren Sproles, and Smallwood ended up playing 44% of the team's snaps, and he carried the ball 10 times, and he also saw 6 targets through the air. And this was a game where the Eagles had the lead. Anytime the Eagles have the lead, you should assume LeGarrette Blount's going to be on the field. And yes, he was on the field. He carried the ball 16 times. But he also played 9 fewer snaps than Wendell Smallwood did. So if you were unsure going into this game who was going to step up for Darren Sproles, we got the answer. It was Wendell Smallwood. And that brings a really nice floor in PPR formats. Last season, Sproles had 8 top 24 performances, which was hit by only 15 other running backs in fantasy football. Sometimes having that floor is really nice and beneficial for your lineup. So if you're going to buy Wendell Smallwood, I think that your negotiation should be something like this. I think you approach the Smallwood owner and you say, look at LeGarrette Blount and how many rushes he had in week 4. Wendell Smallwood isn't the lead back in that offense. And then in turn, send some of your bench assets for a guy who could have legitimate RB2 upside this season. I really like Wendell Smallwood in the usage that we saw in week 4. Add Andre Ellington. So the Cardinals have real offensive line issues too. Carson Palmer has hit 16 times on Sunday. No other quarterback was hit more than 12 times. And that's been a constant trend for this offense. Carson Palmer is not playing nearly as bad as what people think. It's just that he's constantly under pressure. One way to mask a poor offensive line is through quick dump-offs and shorter passes. Now, this doesn't really fit the MO of a typical Bruce Arians offense, but Palmer is going to need some sort of security blanket out of the backfield with David Johnson not there. That could be Andre Ellington. You know, to be fair, Andre Ellington isn't only lining up in the backfield. I get it. But regardless, among all NFL backs since week 2, so this is after David Johnson's injury, according to Pro Football Focus, Ellington's run the second most passing routes. And he played 54% of Arizona snaps on Sunday, leading the Cardinals backfield in what was the most neutral game script of all time. The other crazy thing is that Brandon Gadula, my colleague at NumberFire, he posted this on Twitter. Carson Palmer is currently pacing to break the NFL's passing attempt record. That means there will be plenty of looks to go around in this offense. I don't think that Andre Ellington's going to see another 14-target game, but I think that he could be a nice flex option in PPR formats moving forward. Add Thomas Rawls and Eddie Lacy. I thought the day from a football perspective couldn't have gotten any worse. And then Chris Carson gets hurt on Sunday night. You guys know that I love Chris Carson. He was a guy who did not pop in my prospect model, but I love watching Chris Carson. He was by far the best early down back in this backfield. So now they're going to have to replace that early down work with the combination of Thomas Rawls and Eddie Lacy. Bottom line is, you guys want to know who to pick up out of those two. My answer, and I do not lean heavily this way, is Thomas Rawls. One of the reasons is because we've seen Thomas Rawls with a lot of upside in this offense before. We've also seen Eddie Lacy not look very good. But there is also this quote from Pete Carroll after Sunday's game. He said, quote, "With Chris being banged up, we're so fortunate to have Thomas ready to jump back out there. We're just lucky that we have a guy like that who's ready to go and is healthy and all that." You can take that quote a million different ways. One reporter on ESPN took it as Thomas Rawls is the favorite to be the early down back. I wouldn't go that far. But the fact that he's talking about Thomas Rawls is not a bad thing. I'm not sure one early down back emerges in this offense, but if there is one, my money would be on Thomas Rawls and not Eddie Lacy, given what we've seen this season. Hold Jay Ajayi. A fear coming into the season with Jay Ajayi that I talked about is that he's offensive line sensitive. Jim Sonnis wrote an article about this on NumberFire, but his efficiency splits last year with and without particular offensive line personnel were kind of scary. Everyone wants to blame Jay Cutler, but a huge reason this Miami offense hasn't been able to do anything is because the offensive line has been atrocious. And it's a makeshift offensive line. That's part of the reason why. It's an absolute mess. So the hope with Ajayi is that that group can start to gel together since it is a makeshift group. And over the next 2 weeks, the Dolphins do get plus offensive matchups against Tennessee and Atlanta. And they're finally going to play a game in Miami. So there are some positives surrounding this offense. They'll finally be at home. The offensive line might gel together. And Jay Ajayi is seeing over 82% of the team's rushing attempts. That is the best market share in the entire NFL. It would just not make much sense to sell Jay Ajayi low right now. Add Jacoby Brissett. I don't know if you guys have looked at the schedule for week 5, but quarterback streaming is a complete dumpster fire this week. Jacoby Brissett might be the best low-key or lower-owned quarterback streamer. The 49ers will be in Indianapolis, so Brissett will be at home. He's averaging 5 deep ball tosses per game, or throws that go 15 or more yards through the air. And on those throws, he's got a 108 quarterback rating. That's a top 10 number in the league. San Francisco not only ranks below average in terms of fantasy points against the quarterbacks, but they're top 10 in deep balls allowed and touchdowns thrown via the big play. Brissett has only had one good matchup this year. It was against Cleveland at home. And in that game, he was able to throw 259 yards and a touchdown while finding the end zone twice on the ground. I don't think we should predict something like that again, but it goes to show that there is some ceiling with his production. And maybe T.Y. Hilton, a deep ball specialist, can exploit this matchup against San Francisco. But it's a rough week for quarterback streaming in general, so if you have a more traditional option, I would just go with that option over someone like Jacoby Brissett. By DeSean Jackson. The Buccaneers have played just 3 games, but DeSean Jackson has 9 deep ball targets. Only 11 wide receivers have more deep ball targets than DeSean Jackson does. Now, that's only translated to one useful fantasy football performance because he's connected on just 3 of those passes on the season. You could sometimes manage your fantasy football team in small increments throughout the year, in small chunks, if you will. That's what we're doing here with DeSean Jackson, because over the next 2 weeks, he gets a Patriots defense that's allowed the most passing yards in the entire league, and they've given up the most yards per play on throws that travel 15 or more yards through the air. And then in week 6, Tampa Bay will face Arizona. That matchup might not look that good on paper, but Jackson will undoubtedly be matched up a lot against Justin Bethel. Competent number 2 wide receivers have done a lot of work against Bethel this year. We watched Babytron Kenny Galladay post a wide receiver 5 performance in week 1 against them, and then Bryce Butler was a top 24 wide receiver back in week 3. You really shouldn't have to give up a lot to get DeSean Jackson right now. And I think that the payoff could be really big over the next 2 weeks. Like I said, sometimes that's how you have to play fantasy football. You have to look at little chunks throughout the season. Add Austin Seferian Jenkins. Since returning to the football field this year, ASJ has 10 targets, 9 catches, and 77 yards in 2 games. That's an 18.5% target market share in the Jets offense, which is pretty good for a tight end. Especially a tight end in the Jets offense. And ASJ kind of has a dream matchup in week 5. He's going to be facing Cleveland. Cleveland allowed the number 1 tight end performance in week 1 to Jesse James, the 4th best one to Benjamin Watson in week 2, and then Tyler Kroft in week 4 scored 2 touchdowns. It's a bad defense, but it's also a bad defense against tight ends. I think ASJ is a great streaming option. Add the New York Jets defense. I don't love streaming a road defense, and I definitely don't love streaming a below average road defense. But it's tough to ignore the New York Jets against a Cleveland Browns squad that's allowed at least 1 sack, 8 quarterback hits, and 1 interception in each game this season. DeShone Kizer keeps turning the ball over, and that's very good for opposing defenses in fantasy football, even the Jets. The over-under in this game in Cleveland is set at 39. I think the Jets have a nice floor this week, despite not having the nicest defense. By Rishard Matthews. This week's bonus transaction is a short-term play, similar to the DeSean Jackson one, but it's to buy Rishard Matthews. The hope is that Marcus Mariota won't miss any time. We saw him leave the game in week 4 with that injury. If he does miss time, you'll want to just ignore this transaction. Pretend it didn't happen. But get this, guys. Rishard Matthews currently is 7th in target market share in the entire NFL, seeing nearly 28% of Tennessee's targets. And he's seen 40% of Tennessee's red zone targets, which is the 3rd most in the entire NFL. He's only scored once, but good things should come. Once Corey Davis comes back, things could get muddied up a bit, but the Titans get the Dolphins, Colts, and the Browns over the next 3 weeks, so that passing attack could really ball out. And Rishard Matthews should play a big part in that. That's it for the transactions, though. Thanks again for tuning in. If you've yet to subscribe to this show, please do so by going to iTunes, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Google Play, and Stitcher. Also, now that September is over, it's time to announce the winner of the free Number Fryer Premium subscription. We've chosen a random person who left a rating and review on iTunes, and Wiggles_KC, you've won. Congrats. Hit me up at JJ@numberfire.com and I'll get you hooked up. We're going to start doing this every month, so we'll do the same for October. All you have to do is go to iTunes, leave a rating and review for this show, and we'll draw a name at random at the end of the month for a free NumberFire premium subscription for an entire year. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter at LateRoundQB, and if you have any questions for this week's mailbag show, you can send them to Twitter or email me at jj@numberfire.com. But please, guys, no start sit questions. Thanks, everyone. I'll talk to you on Thursday with the weekly Start Sit Show.